when I asked my friend, who I'll call Macy, how she's doing, she does not respond with the predictable, "I'm fine." She actually tells you, "Well, I'm a little depressed. I'm kind of tired." She might mention her boss, who's been a jerk again this week, but she just doesn't have the energy to get her resume together and can't quite get her job search off the ground. Macy is not someone who buys into the fake it till you make it philosophy, which can be a little disconcerting when you first meet her, but I love her and she has a lot of friends. I think in part because she tells it like it is. When she lets down her guard, she makes room for others to let down some of theirs. It's not for everyone, this full Monty lack of pretense, but there is something to it. And as we explore the idea of integrity from the perspective of welcoming all the parts of who you are, it was an example that leapt to my mind. My friend with her open, unguarded, unconventional response to that highly conventional question. My friend who tends to be more open than most when it comes to how she is and who she is. How do any of us navigate the ground of what we choose or choose not to share with others about how or who we are? How much do any of us want to see the truth about how or who we are? There's this great scene in the movie Inside Out in which the main character, aptly named Joy because she is full of joy, must find her way out of a giant maze in which she and another character, aptly named Sadness because she is full of sadness, have accidentally been dumped. The story setup, for those who didn't see the movie or don't remember, is that five emotions personified as characters named joy and sadness and anger and disgust and fear, each of these characters grapple for control of the mind of an 11-year-old girl named Riley. Joy acts as the de facto leader, and thinking that Riley should be happy all the time, tries to exile sadness, keep her away from Riley's decision-making process, does not want Riley to even see sadness in herself. But as I was saying, there's this fabulous scene in which Joy, seeking to escape this complex maze in which she finds herself, needs sadness's help. But sadness, who reminds me of my friend a little, is predictably undone by her overwhelming melancholy. Although she wants to help, she cannot muster the energy to do anything but lie exhausted on the floor. Joy is characteristically undaunted, however, and cheerfully grabbing her by the foot, simply drags Sadness along on their mutual quest. As they head off into the distance, you can just barely catch Sadness saying as her head gently glides over the tiles, "Hey, that actually feels kind of good." I don't think that in that moment the movie was making some grand statement about how when our disparate emotions work together, it can feel kind of good. But nevertheless, that is part of the film's overall message. Separating off our feelings or any part of who we are tends to be a recipe for less than total happiness, less than full effectiveness as we try to find our way out of our mazes in our lives. Carl Jung has said that the more we suppress any part of ourselves, the more, ironically, it has power over us, leaving us unbalanced. When we finally engage, on the other hand, and bring what's hidden into consciousness, it can instead allow us to work with our disparate feelings, even the negative ones, for good. Which is not to say that hidden parts of ourselves are always connected to sadness or something we might consider negative. One of the podcasts in this month's integrity theme packet was about a woman named Tanya, who had always seen herself as kind of a tough, edgy, rough, don't mess with me kind of person. 6 feet tall and with a shaved head, she woke up one morning to hear her own self not sleep talking, but sleep giggling. Subsequently recording herself while she slept, she discovered she had a whole other side. One that, as she described, was like a happy, sweet four-year-old who might like tickle fights or wearing yellow sundresses. Tanya's own young life had been hard, and just exactly how it happened that this part got cut off, she didn't say, maybe she didn't know. What she did know was that this previously hidden side had something important to offer her, and that she wanted more of herself back. Being your full self, being authentic, being real, it's a big thing in our culture. In fact, it's not just about having all of yourself, but also the freedom to show it. Express yourself, be yourself. You do you, as they say. Brené Brown has been beating this drum for years now. Be vulnerable, be open, dare greatly, share your truth. It creates, like with my friend, permission for others to do it too. It lowers stress. I read somewhere that when our outsides match our insides, it lowers our tension levels. I even read once that when people tell it like it is, it boosts life expectancy. I read somewhere that those who do just let it all hang out tend to live longer. Do note that that same article soberingly offered a footnote that spouses of those people tended to live less long. So there are trade-offs to consider. Yeah. In fact, even as we as a culture celebrate the benefits of vulnerability and transparency, there are considerations to take into account. You knew there had to be another side to this. As Reverend Aaron White pointed out in a sermon he preached on integrity, even as this culture celebrates the idea of being who you are, that particular who is not always accepted. In fact, some of that sharing is not even always safe. When it comes to vulnerable populations in particular, he said, when it comes to talking about being trans or queer, when it comes to race or culture, or I would add, mental health, hiding behind some sort of mask can literally mean the difference between life or death, or between community or loneliness, employment, or poverty. I get how a lot of us would hide, he said. And even when it's not life-threatening, there are still considerations. I remember watching with interest a short YouTube interview Oprah Winfrey did with Brené Brown. It looked to me almost like a sequel, a corrective on Brené's original vulnerability talk. In this clip, she encourages people to look before they take the vulnerability leap. If we share with the wrong person, she said, they can become one more piece of flying debris in an already dangerous storm. And then she said a line that really stuck with me. Make sure you share with people who have earned the right to hear your story. with people who can bear the weight of your truth. It made me wonder how many people in the flush of excitement after her first groundbreaking talk dove ahead, jumped in, dared greatly, told it all, and found themselves not, after all, caught in that grand trust fall. I wonder how many people felt pressure to share things before they were ready. It made me think about times when the weight of some truth was just too much for a relationship of mine. Either because I wasn't ready or because it was just too much for that particular moment in that particular relationship. Times when I shared something and it just didn't go well. I could tell right away. Oh, you know that moment? It made me think about why we all need so much encouragement to be vulnerable in the first place. It's not because we can't see all the benefits. I think it's because we've all had experiences of not being caught in that trust fall. Whether that's recently, or whether that's from some time really long ago, I think of us all as kids, especially really little kids. Kids can't help but let it all hang out. It's just all there. I talked about some of this in December, how babies have these wide open hearts with all this big love and incredible warmth. But then, too, there is also those unrestrained tears or yells or that wholehearted fury. Or with a young child, they are unself-consciously kind, they are impetuously generous, unreservedly affectionate, and they also have this unvarnished selfishness and undisguised meanness. I mean, kids can be cruel. It's all just right there on full display. And we were all like that. I believe we were all full and whole with all these multifaceted, beautiful, and difficult sides of us. And the people around us didn't always warmly receive all of it. Couldn't always help us integrate it. They were busy, or they were afraid, or they got triggered, or they just couldn't. So we learned not to show it all. Sometimes it was the darker feelings they couldn't handle. Sometimes it was the joy. Or maybe that key moment for you is later in life when you realize that someone you trusted couldn't handle all of you, at least not all the time. What do you do with that? What have we done with that? Some of us went toward the cautious side, saying not much of anything to anyone anymore. Maybe some of us went a little numb and now are maybe a little out of tune with the reactions of others, vulnerable to sharing just a little more than the people around us can handle. Some of us wrap our anger in a tight little ball and banish it to the emotional basement, or we never show our sadness, or have separated off our giggly, sundressed, loving selves because it wasn't safe to show all that once. But the beautiful thing is we never lose it. We never lose any part of who we are, I believe. Not the open-hearted sharing, not the bold, righteous anger, not the part that's always looking out for us, not our affectionate, loving sweetness. And on some level, I think we keep looking for ways to show what's in us anyway. I believe on some level, we never fully give up. In smaller ways, sometimes in bigger ways, other times we still seek connection to be genuinely known, warmly received, authentically seen. Sometimes it's only when we share with others that we even know some part of us is there. And the reality is, this is a new moment. We can be thoughtful about how and with whom to share. We can distribute the weight of the truths we long to tell. We can build relationships of trust. We can be that friend for others as part of building communities of trust. I think of our connection group set up intentionally to create the kind of collective attention that can distribute the weight of some bigger truths. And I am here for you. Even if you don't want to share some actual thing with me, I can help you think and feel your way through the potential to share it with someone, somewhere. We do not need to blindly leap into a chasm. We can choose moments and places that will work for us. I suspect that most of us are wiser about all of that than we sometimes know. But this sharing will never be risk-free. There's this great song that came out a little over 10 years ago. It's by Peter Meyer, and this song has been playing in my head over and over as I write this sermon. And it goes something like this. Let's see if I can remember it here on the spot. Say what you need to say. 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 And then the bridge. Have no fear for giving in. Have no fear for giving over. You better know that in the end, better to say too much than never to say what you need to say, my friend. And then, even if your hands are shaking, even if your faith is broken, even as the eyes are closing, do it with your heart wide open. Say what you need to say. Say what you need to say. Feel free to join me. Say what you need to say. 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 A Westminster member said to me recently that he thought there is little we humans want more than to be known. Sharing will never be risk-free. But if we trust the fall, we may just find our wings. May it be so. Amen.